Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
It's Wednesday, the 8th of April. Happy birthday, Jenny Green.
Happy birthday. Coming up today, Brian Hurley joins us with some vital Easter holiday advice.
Oh, can't wait for it. World middleweight champion and now coach to Tyson Fury, our Wednesday legend has done it all. We catch up with Andy Lee.
Ladies and gentlemen, here at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, the winner by TKO victory, and now the WBO middleweight champion of the world, Irish Andy Lee.
God, I'd love to see a boxing match. Be another while yet. Plus, we've a Dublin football star, Niamh McAvoy, on going from down under to lockdown as she returns from Melbourne.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, all that and much more between now and the amazing Lyra's live gig here on 2FM for the ISPCC at 7 o'clock. You can text us on Game On at 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Marie, how are we doing?
I'm great. Got a big boost today. Liverpool released a little bit of a clip. It was all of the first team doing yoga. Well, they didn't actually do the yoga, but they were all together on Zoom. So we kind of saw them all hanging around. Virgil van Dijk, Mo Salah, Mane. It was great.
You sent it on to me. It's brilliant. You know what I love? They obviously have a thing where they sing happy birthday.
Yeah, I know. It was great. And they were doing it in all their different languages as well, which was really nice.
So they shouted over, right, let's hear it in Dutch and the lads take it away, or let's hear it in English.
And Jurgen Klopp was encouraging them as well. So it was a nice team spirit.
I love the very start of the video, and we'll put it up on our Twitter account. They say, can anyone just cross their legs? And it's brilliant to actually hear professional athletes that can't do things that people find really easy.
Yeah, that was, I think Oxlade-Chamberlain was the first to come out with that, and then the rest of the players were agreeing with him. Nobody actually was able to do that.
I remember, because I used to find yoga really good when I got older and for playing, and going to yoga classes really good, but I couldn't master that one where you lie on the ground and you with your feet behind you and you just bend backwards. You know the one I'm on about? You just, it's like you fold your body over with your face to the roof.
I don't know what the technical yoga name for it is, but if anybody does that's listening to Donica's description there, 51552, please send it in.
But I remember I was saying that to Jenny, and she was heavily pregnant at the time, and she just folded over and had no problem doing it at all. I was there, oh my God, look at this, like, no problem.
Mobility issues, Donica?
No. Always been trouble for me. You'll never guess what happened to me last night.
Oh no.
Yeah, I was walking home. Walking home after the show. So obviously, people don't know we are keeping good social distance on Game On. Marie's in Dublin, and I'm in Cork. So I was walking home after the show, and I'm not joking, Marie. I saw a seal on the bridge, bringing me across from the school of music to the school of comm. Just out of nowhere, a seal popped out of the water, and I thought I was seeing
onto the footpath.
No,
saw a seal in the river.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe it was just a giddy night because we'd Peter Crouch and Connor Sketches and Tommy Bow on last night that it was giddy. But
how did you react to the seal?
Do you know what? I didn't think I was seeing it, and then it went under the water for honestly about 2 minutes, and then it popped up. At the start, I thought it was someone, and I was there. I can see why someone would do that. We're all going a little bit crazy at the moment, and just jump in the river wouldn't be.
Did you take out your phone and take a picture?
Yes, I did, but it's not very good.
Might as well put another call out. If anybody else saw the seal in the river in Cork where Donica walks home, please text us.
Did
in
that
with,
really happen? That's all I want to know.
With a photo to 51552, please.
Can't see
or tag
going.
Him on Twitter.
Absolutely. Where do we go after that?
Well, I think there is a lot of people talking about nature and how we're reconnecting with it. So if we're reconnecting with nature, I'm sure that animals are as well, and going back to their natural habitats and where they're comfortable. So I believe you is what I'm saying.
It sounds like a sminky short sketch though, isn't it? The Cork seal, I could just imagine them.
The weather is lovely though, so I completely understand why everybody is out and about, but at the same time, we all need to be very cognizant of the situation that we're in with the coronavirus and stay at home where we possibly can and keep our social distance. And you would think that with the weekend coming, Easter weekend coming, that people would have enough cop on to stay at home, but it turns out, Donica, they don't.
Okay. That's disappointing to hear, isn't it?
It is disappointing today. And earlier, Cork footballer Brian Hurley added his voice to the calls asking people not to come to their holiday homes. Plenty of people have them in Clare and Wexford and all around the country. And Brian Hurley, who is from West Cork, joins us now. Brian, how are things?
Hi, Marie. How are you keeping?
Well, not too bad. Did you see any seals in Cork over the last few days?
I haven't, to be honest. I've been keeping indoors and just keeping to myself, to be honest with you. So, the weather's been quite all right. I've only been in the back garden. So.
Brian, I'm not making it up, man. I saw a seal in Cork.
Very good. No, I'm actually in the city now myself as well. I've been away from the parents' stuff down in West Cork. Would love to be down there, but unfortunately, it's just following the guidelines, like, you know.
Like everybody, we would hope anyway. So, Brian, you tweeted today that you want to encourage people to stay at home, not to go to West Cork. Your mom works in a shop down there. She's delivering groceries to the elderly. She's helping out a lot of people in the community. And I think it should be a given that people should stay at home, but they're not. And I know in Castlehaven, they must be worried.
Yeah, look, I just think, like, you know, people need to use their heads a bit more and just follow the advice we've been given by the HSE and the government. Like, there's been a lot of different regs down in West Cork over the last few days, and it's just not the right time, I don't think. And just the mother from the inside in the shop, like, she sees different faces coming in each day, and there's a lot of in rural Ireland, there's a lot of vulnerable people, and they're just very worried and, you know, nearly afraid to come into the shops and stuff. And, you know, like, even in small places, in, like, Hewton Hall and different villages, the shops aren't the biggest and the supply wouldn't be massive either. So it's just, you know, if people need to use their heads slightly a bit more and, as I said, listen to the voice and just stay in their own homes. And I know it's probably hard with the weather and whatnot, but it's just, you know, everyone wants to get back to normality and get back to their normal lives. But I think until we start, you know, doing what the professionals are telling us, that won't happen. Like,
it must be really worrying for you, for your mother, though. Like, we have a shop at home as well, and my mum is working there every day, and I'm worried for her, and I can't even imagine how extra concerned I'd be if I thought that this weekend there was going to be a huge amount of people descending on the place and into the shop. She's kind of doing a service for the community, I think, going to work every day, as is your mum, and the last thing that they need is extra people coming in on top of them.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, it's just, you don't know where they're coming from or, you know, who they've been in contact with. And she was a bit, you know, nervous about the whole thing as well. But everyone has to help out in their own community and do their own bit. I just think travelling is just not an option, really. Like, you know, I know it's probably harder with kids and whatnot to get out of the city and to chill out. And when you have a big back garden in West Cork or West Clare or wherever it is, but as I said, like, you know, the professionals are saying not to do it, and they're the ones that know best. And the mother side of it, like, yeah, look, like, you know, shops and stuff have to stay open and stuff, but if it's been crowded and people are coming in from all sorts, it's just not ideal, and I don't think it's done, to be honest. Like, I haven't been down in West Cork in 3 weeks, and I'd love to get down there, but, you know, I'm just doing what I'm taught and trying to do my bit, and I think everyone else needs to hopefully do theirs as well, you know.
Brian, from a sports point of view, this is like, there's a self-discipline to sport that separates the best teams and the best people to do the simple things right when no one's looking or when it's most needed. And, like, we're not talking about massive sacrifices here. We're talking about people staying home. Like, we've people dying in Ireland from this virus, and we can actually control it, and we can, you know, slow the curve, as they're saying. And just to hear that people are increasing, heading away, it's just not on.
Yeah, it is madness. Like, you know, anyone that plays any sport, whether football, rugby, soccer, there is sacrifices. Like, and, you know, there's a lot of big ones to be made, not throughout your career, but this is very, very small. Like, you know, and like, the, you know, the, at the end of a tunnel, like, you know, it's severe, like, you know what I mean? And if we haven't learned from the likes of, you know, of looking at the news of Italy and whatnot, like, it's been scary, and even across the States, and like, I think if we just don't follow the guidelines and do the simple things, especially, like, you know, as we said earlier about the weather is unreal, and, if you know, if you're off work or whatnot, you can chill out the back and whatnot, and, or even, you know, go for a walk with the kids and stuff. But I just think the shooting off to the coastlines is a bit mad, and that's kind of why, like, I highlighted it, you know. We all, you know, sports show, everyone loves sports, I love the GAA, I miss it like hell, but until we all get on top of this and you know, overcome it, it won't get back to normality. Like, and I suppose that's where I was coming from in that way, like, you know.
Yeah, it does seem like sport is a long way away at the moment. Brian, yourself, just in terms of fitness, how are you doing?
All right, yeah, in fairness, it's a bit weird, I suppose, and being injured for a few years and stuff, you get used to training on your own, unfortunately. But I'm just trying to fill my diary each day and keep an old routine, like, you know. You feel a bit like a professional, and Dunica might know more about that. Like, you know, you get to train every day, and I suppose do what you want with your body. But yeah, look, it's weird. It's very weird because, you know, you're training fairly hard. You know, like, we'd be out 4 or 5 days a week, and you're pushing yourself. You don't know what you're training for when you're actually performing. So it's hard to set a peak or what exactly you're training for, but. It's enjoyable. I like training and stuff. Anyway, it's just to know what's at the end of it. You don't know. But look, I've taken off a bit of cooking there online and stuff, and you can do it for different bits of bobs. So it's a bit of fun as well, like, you know. And it's just about setting a routine and keeping your diary filled each day, I think, is key, like, you know.
Yeah, Brian, I've been chatting to a few of my friends that are still playing, and they're actually thankful of a little bit of a break to get their bodies feeling fresh and well and right. How are you feeling body-wise?
Yeah, good. Like, I suppose, like, my year hasn't gone as I'd like to. Like, I've probably been training since November, and I've only played 10 minutes football. So, I was the weekend was all locked down. I was due to come back, but yeah, I picked up my training a bit more and was able to dog myself a bit, because I suppose you're not really training for an actual game or a competition, so you can actually push yourself that bit more. So. Yeah, it's very good in that way. You can get yourself in the best condition you can, and, you know, you fairly have time in your hands as well to get your cooking and your diet side of it right. So you see a lot of people out training, which is a good sign, like, you know. But it's a weird feeling. It's kind of like, it's like you're injured because there's no competition coming, but, you know, you can still get the max out of yourself.
Does, yeah. We heard from Ronan McCarthy a little while ago, about a week ago. He said there's no chance of Cork's Munster semi-final against Kerry taking place on May 24th. So just in terms of preparation, like, how are you all staying together? Are you on Zoom or what are you doing?
Yeah, sure. Jeez, social media is great these days. You Snapchat and WhatsApp and Zoom. Yeah, no, we're missing, just keep you in touch. It's because, like, Dunica, you know, virtually, like, you're training with guys like 5-6 nights a week, and next minute you haven't seen each other in a month, so there's obviously going to be good contact, and it's just, you miss the banter and the crack in the dressing room, like, you know. It's just, that's the hardest part, to be honest with you, like, you know. But it's just, you know, it's keeping in touch, how they're finding sessions and stuff like that, what are they doing, can you learn off each other, really. And from the point of view of what's coming, we just don't know. I suppose the most important thing is this, look, everyone's health is 100%, and it starts to come down, and we can hopefully enjoy things in going forward, like, you know.
Yeah. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to catching you when you're back out in the field playing. But I think your message tonight is so important to remind people to stay at home. Thanks for joining us on Game On.
Thanks, Dunica.
We're going to take a quick break and we're back with Andy Lee.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We just heard from Brian Hurley there, and he had a very important message encouraging people to stay home and not go to their holiday homes and descend on all the small villages who are already under pressure with coronavirus. And Dunica, I think it's really good to see sports people using their platform now to come out and deliver these important messages.
Yeah, and I think it's important as well, the discipline of sport. Marie, that's what separates the good ones. They do the simple things well, and we're on track. You know, it's unfortunate what's happening, but if we stay the course now and don't put the pressure on other people that are making massive sacrifices, our frontline workers, everyone that's out there, we need to help them.
I know, so. You have a good line you want to say? Come on, you've been saying it to me all day.
Get
now's
out
your
back,
moment.
Get out your back and tans. I saw it in the mirror this morning. I was there. That's brilliant. Whoever did that pun is a genius.
I knew you'd love it.
Okay, there's so many incredible people from Limerick. Michael D. Higgins, the Cranberry, even the odd rugby player Marie. It's a sport-mad county, thirsty for success. But what's more important for it is that its sons and daughters reflect where they're from and what they're about. No one has done that better than tonight's Wednesday legend, Andy Lee. A world middleweight champion and now a hugely successful boxing coach. Andy, how are you?
Grand, that's probably the best intro I've ever had.
Oh, I'll take that, I wrote it myself.
Loving that.
Andy, how things?
Good, like everybody else, staying home and following the rules and still doing a small bit of training myself, a little bit of running, a little bit of weights, but no boxing and no training other people, just staying home and keeping my daughter entertained, which is my biggest job.
How old is she?
She'll be 3 in June, so she's a handful.
Ooh, that is work.
Yeah, but it's just tough because you can't. It's hard for them to understand, and you can't really explain it. We're just telling people, "Oh, people are sick, so your creche is closed." She hasn't seen another child in 3 weeks now, so it's really tough. But we keep her entertained. There's plenty of fun to be had. We have a bouncy castle in the back garden, so she's flying it.
I think it's kind of nice to spend the time with them. I have 3 little boys myself. I have one and he's just 3 as well. And the other day he asked me, could he have an ice cream? And I said, what's the magic word? And he said, virus.
You're joking.
Yeah,
I know. Like, you have to flip these things on their heads. And like, this is, I know it's a forced lockdown in a way, but it's time we'll never get again to spend, hopefully, touch wood, there's not a reoccurrence, but we can be with your family and just share time together. No one has to leave the home and you can just be together. So there's no real excuse. And it's like, apart from, like, I'm not really missing anything apart from the socializing and the simple things, but it's just so nice to be home and to be with my wife and the child. Like, it's just, it's like I'm saying, just take a different approach and this will all be over hopefully soon and you look back at this time and make the most of it while it's here.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I keep finding my little boys as well in different beds in with each other and they're great pals. It's so nice to see. Just Andy, then on like coaching, so you do have a couple of people that you're working with. How are you keeping in touch with them? What are you doing? Paddy Donovan, Jason Quigley?
Yeah, they're training at home by themselves. There's not really much we can do, and boxing is, as with every sport, is completely finished now, and no one knows when it will resume. And once people go back to normal life, what will happen around sporting events? Because obviously, the crowd is a huge part of it, and so they're just training by themselves at home and keeping fit, a bit of running, a bit of shadow boxing, and they both have gyms at home, so they're able to do punching. But we keep in touch. And that's basically all we can do. It's not, there's not really too much we can do. Paddy, unfortunately, was meant to fight in Madison Square Garden on St. Patrick's Day. He was in New York. He flew over the Tuesday before. I was due to fly the Saturday before. But the fights were all cancelled on the Thursday night. So he had to come home. But look, this thing will pass and boxing will be back. And it is. I don't think it will rush, like maybe with Jason. Jason's 28 now, and so he'll have missed, this will be however long this will take. It'll be a significant bit of time in his career. He was supposed to fight on May 2nd against Jack Cullen. That fight will probably still happen, but in terms of his progression, instead of being like what we had hoped for, fighting for a title in a year's time, maybe push to 8 months or, become a little bit quicker than. Just because of the time, with his age and that.
Would you imagine there being boxing behind closed doors with no fans? Is that something you think would work?
Something that's been muted, fighting in studios. I think, if it was, there was a fight now on pay-per-view, I think it would be one of the biggest pay-per-views because everyone's dying to watch something.
Absolutely.
But I just think, I think the crowd is an integral part of it in any sport, but boxing as well, because it's such a tribal kind of thing, 2 sets of supporters coming to support their guy and see something so primal like an actual fight. And also there's, the revenue from a crowd, it's a big part of the fighters' purses whether they're selling tickets or not. So I don't know. I just, who knows which way it will go in the future. But look, the lads, they'll just want to fight, and under any circumstances, that's what they'll hope for. So if it is without a crowd initially in the first part of the recovery from this, then it'll have to be that way.
Yeah, Andy, we'll go back over your career, but just before we do, the transition from being in the ring to the corner, you've done a massive job of that, really top of the bus. You know, how have you found it?
It's a big transition, and it's a lot of work in a different way. Obviously, when you're fighting, you're training, that's the work. But in terms of, like, when I'm training the two lads, and even with Tyson Fury, you're constantly thinking about it. You do the session, and you're constantly analysing the session in your head and thinking about which ways they can improve and what I could have done differently to communicate to them. You know, I was quite fortunate in the sense that I'm still able to display the technique, you know, and sometimes you learn more from what you see than what you're told. So if there's something I can see them that you need to make an adjustment, I can easily get up in the ring and display it for them, you know, in a specific way. So that's something that's helped me, you know, being still kind of in touch with boxing. But as the fighters have progressed, so have I. And like, less than a year now coaching, but you just draw on all your experience. And think about, like, constantly thinking about my career, the fights I had, my coaches, how they spoke to me, words they would say, things they taught me, and just try to impart that in the best possible way. But look, with Paddy and Jason, they're two hugely talented fighters, and so it's a bit easy. It's not like they're raw novices. Those guys are. Jason was a European and world silver medal, European champion and world silver medalist as an amateur, and Paddy was a sensational amateur and a sensational talent. So, you know, they're a bit easier to work with, and it's only fine tuning them now at this stage.
Has anything surprised you just in terms of making that transition? Something that you thought you knew, or something that you learned that just took you by surprise?
Yeah, I think. You never stop learning, and this is a different challenge for me. And just the way you communicate to the fighters. You know, I think Paddy had his second fight. He fought a really tough guy from South America, and Paddy punched him a pill at the post for every round, had him down, had him hurt every round, but was forcing it too much. And that was something that I experienced during my career at times. And then I analysed it and thought about it a lot. And then in his next fight, fighting a very similar opponent, a guy who'd never been stopped, and my advice to Paddy, which I realised in the first fight, was not to force the issue and to be creative and allow your opponent a little bit of success so that he opens up and gives you an opportunity. And Paddy knocked him out in the second round. And like, you're constantly learning, and it's, you know, you never stop. So,
and Andy, what did you see there for that type of advice? You know, what did you spot?
He had, like, when you're in a fight and you're putting it on your opponent. You Paddy was punching this guy, as I said, Phil Torres, you hit him with everything you had. But and so what happened? The guy retreated into his shell and went into like a survival mode, and he was completely tensed up and. Anytime Paddy punched him, he was really, like, you know, bracing himself to absorb the punches. And you're never going to knock a guy out like that or stop a guy. Even though you might dominate him, you're never really going to stop him. So you have to, like, there's two ways of hitting, of stopping somebody in a fight. It's either you hit them with a punch they don't see, or you fight at a pace they can't live at. And so they kind of have to check out mentally and physically. But with Paddy, he's such a quick fighter, and I knew that, and he's such a skillful and tricky fighter, that if he was creative and not trying to force it or trying to impress people outside the ring, he's still under 20 years old, 21 now, and he was 20 at the time, that he would, that the opportunity would come. And the kind of almost like the less he tried, the easier it would be. because the opportunities have come, and he created the opportunity by simply throwing feints and giving the guy a small bit of success by letting him land jabs, and then Paddy countered the jab and he was on the ground. Next thing you knew, the guy was on the ground getting counted out.
But Andy, you saw that from your experience, from being in there, from having that moment, for seeing someone, you know, going into that survival mode. Do you wish you had someone in your corner like that? That, you know, when you went back, said, you know, that had that type of real life experience you had there?
Yeah, look, I was very fortunate with the coaches I work with, whether it be luck or seeking them out. But, you know, from my coaches in Limerick, Ken Moore and Finbar O'Brien to Zora, Antti Aird and Billy Walsh with the Irish setup, I was always very fortunate. I can't play with Emmanuel Shute, probably the greatest coach that ever lived, and he was a great cornerman as well as coach. And then Adam Booth, who's still one of the best trainers in boxing. So I was always fortunate, and it's those from those people and those experiences that I draw from.
And on the communication that you mentioned there, would you communicate differently with somebody like Tyson, who's so experienced, compared to somebody like Paddy, who's just starting out?
Yeah, with Tyson, it was certainly a collaborative experience. You know, it was more of like collaboration, because he's got an unbelievable wealth. Now, people don't realise this about him, but he's like a boxing historian, and he can tell you who fought who and how they won the fight back in 1950. You know, he's got an unbelievable brain for boxing, and so a lot of the time within the Tyson camp, when we were training, we would work in the gym. And he is such a, like, people see him and he's a larger than life character. But don't be fooled. When he's in the gym working, he works extreme. He's as hard as worker as I've seen. Takes it very serious. He's very focused when he's working. And then we would do that every day. But then also when we come back from the gym, we would talk about it. We would talk for hours about boxing, about life, about the training sessions, and about how they went, what he felt worked, and what he was comfortable with. And if I said, no, I think you really need to do this, like focus more on this one thing, he would take it on board and he would try it. And if it didn't work, he would let me know. But luckily, it did work.
I'm following him on Instagram, so I'm seeing his workouts every morning at 9 a.m. with Paris. They're very entertaining. I haven't done any of them yet, but I am watching them in bed.
Yeah, there's like that. They're almost better to watch than I actually do. But yeah, with the kids running around,
he's
a positive guy, and he needs to do that. He's been very open about his battles of mental health, and he needs to train every day. And like, part of that is doing the service with people, but it's also a huge thing for him to do it every day.
What's it like being in that kind of team and camp, though, with all the attention, the media, so many people interested in him? Like, you don't get more box office, I think, than Tyson Fury.
No. Like, we were in Las Vegas, we were training for the heavyweight title. It was all, you know, on the face of it, so, you know, all glamour. But really, we could have been anywhere, because we did nothing. And as I told you about how serious he is about his preparation, we just went. Every morning we went up, we did our morning walk or morning run, and we go to the gym and back to the house and back to the gym in the evening, and that would be it. We could have been anywhere, and it was, you know, it was very, very serious, very, very focused. And it wasn't until after the fight that we really, really enjoyed it, you know, because up to that point, like, he was probably an underdog going into the fight with Wilder. He'd been dropped 2 times and heavily in the last round. And people thought that Wilder was just going to walk through him again and knock him out this time and finish the fight. But Tyson made a big adjustment. And that's, well, small adjustments make big differences, especially in a rematch. And it's who can adjust. And Tyson made the adjustment. He changed trick coaches. He brought me on board and Sugar Hill, who I recommended. He stuck to the game plan. He committed to what we were teaching him. And it was a completely different approach from what he had worked basically his whole career, which he was like a feinter, a mover. For a big man, he was able to do. He could move, he could feint, and he would jab, 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 and try to outbox people. Where we wanted him to use his size, use his strength that he has. It's there. Why not use his advantages and really use his jab? And his jab became a real weapon, and that's what won him the fight.
That's such a credit to you, and not just your coaching credentials, but also the trust that he has in you, that he was able to allow you to recommend things and for him to take them on board and them to be successful. So just in terms of that partnership, is it cemented now for the future?
Yeah, I think so. We spoke about, well, before this fight was kicked off, the rematch possibly in July, and we were speaking about the preparation already for that. And it looks like it'll be put back now to whenever this is over. They're speaking about, talking about October, but who knows where we'll be by then. But yeah, like, and listen, don't get me wrong. I felt I was under huge pressure because I had recommended Sugar Hill. I was involved in the camp. We took this approach, a change of style for Tyson. People who thought he could win thought that he would just box to the, like how he'd always boxed. Although he was knocked down twice in the first fight, he boxed most of the rounds and won most of the rounds. So if he can continue doing that, like the narrative was, if he can continue doing that, then he would see out the fight and not get dropped and he would win on points. But for him to put his trust in us and to change his style and his approach, there was huge pressure on that. And I think that's why you saw me jumping around the ring like that. Like, I'd won the fight when his hand was raised. So, no, it was a fantastic night, and one of the best nights I've had in boxing, regardless, even within my own career. So, look, he did his job, and I think when they do have the rematch, he'll win even easier this time.
It's amazing to hear you say that with all you've done, but I think it's a result of having that beautiful thing. And you mentioned that it's trust, isn't it? Like, he trusted you so much to actually change his style. And looking at him, like, I'll be honest, Andy, I don't know a whole lot about it, but seeing his entrance, like, that, it was over before he arrived nearly. He knew he had the work done.
Yeah, and look, he came up with that entrance by himself. We were sitting around the table one day at lunch and he said, this is how I'm going to come into the ring, and Patsy Cline on a throne. And it was pure, it was pure theatre, you know, it was pure, like, it was, and it was so serene. And he just, you know, you could see at that moment when he was being walked to the ring that this was it, you know, he has an unbelievable mindset. Like, he has a perfect mindset for a fighter, because the day of the fight, you wouldn't believe he was about to step in the ring to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world, like, with a guy who'd knocked him down, had knocked out every other opponent who he'd faced, the biggest puncher in heavyweight history. Like, you wouldn't believe that. Tyson was just as casual as it could be, sitting around the house. We watched a couple of movies on Netflix, talked to talk, he ate his food and had his drinks, and then it was just time. He said, okay, let's go do this. And he, even in the dressing room, he was as relaxed as could be. But right before the fight, he switched on. It was in the moment. It was present. And he did his job. He just, what you saw him do in the ring is what we practice every single day. And that's why it was so satisfying for me as a coach.
And Dee, I know we're in uncertain times at the moment, but like most sports people and people in general, we all have hopes and dreams and goals for the months ahead. What are yours?
Look, everyone to stay safe and stay home and follow the guidelines and follow the rules. We can look back on this time and think, oh, it was nice that we got to spend time with our families and be home and really appreciate the things we took for granted maybe. But get back out and get the two lads fighting. Jason will fight Jack Cullen. That would be a good fight for him. It would be a big fight on Sky Sports. It would be a breakout fight for Jason. And then push for him to challenge for a world title. And for Paddy to keep progressing. And Paddy, as I said, Paddy Donovan is probably, as Carl Frampton highlighted him on a separate podcast the other day, as probably the best prospect in boxing, and he really is, so people should keep an eye out for him.
And Andy, just before we let you go, you tweeted the other day that you recently sat beside Stephen Kenny at a charity dinner. We actually have him on tomorrow night, and yeah. He gave you some advice and it turned everything around for you, and what you said is that Irish football is in great hands.
Yeah, I can't reveal what he said because I'd be telling too much, but I was tossing and turning this thing, situation I was in and dealing with somebody, and I asked him his advice, and it took me back, and listen, I applied what he said to me, and everything went smooth as a fan, so it was good.
It's good to hear. It sounds like Irish soccer's in a great spot. Hopefully boxing is with you there as well, Andy. Thanks so much for joining us on
Game
On.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be on it whenever the boys are fighting again.
Brilliant. We'd
love
Andy.
It. And best of luck chasing the three-year-old. That'll test your footwork, Andy.
Yeah.
We're taking a quick break. Game on 2FM. Welcome back to Game On. It was great to hear from Andy Lee there, Marie, wasn't it? Super star.
Super. Yeah. There was so much we didn't even get to go into.
I know. I was so interested in chatting to him about the time in Detroit, but we need 2 hours, Marie. We need 2 hours.
We do, yeah. We'll have to get him back on again to go through his career because it's super. But it actually kind of hammers home a bit what some of the people we've had on over the last few weeks, like Gary Lineker and Peter Crouch, were saying, that when people are talking about what you've done post your retirement, that you're on the right track, that you're starting to achieve something in a different field. And that's what most sports stars want. They want to try and do something good and something big in something that's a little bit different, and he's doing that already in such a short space of time. He's really making his mark and his name, and it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's super. It really is. It's always good when the Limerick lads are doing well.
Do you think so?
Oh yeah, 100%. They drive the whole place. They're beauts.
Was there rivalry between the Limerick and Cork lads and Munster?
Oh, there always was. Yeah, they thought we were soft, but they were probably right.
You can't be saying that now. There's that's a bone of contention always.
I'm on about the rugby, lads.
I know. Now let's turn our attention to Women's Gaelic Games, as we've christened it over the last few months with our usual slot on a Thursday night. And we are joined by Dublin star Niamh McAvoy, who has recently returned from a stint playing Women's AFL in Australia. Niamh, how are things?
Good, how are you?
We're great, actually, aren't we, Donica?
Yeah, we're all good. Yeah. We're delighted you're on.
We're delighted.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
And we're delighted you're asking us how we are. Usually we're like, how are you getting on? But yeah, we're good.
Niamh, I saw a seal.
That's outside the norm, is it?
Oh yeah, go on, Donica has big news.
Yeah, I saw a seal in Cork City last night. We have it all
wow.
in Cork. Yeah.
That's amazing. I hope it was 2K from your home.
It actually was. It's on the walk home.
Excellent.
See, Niamh, you've given him oxygen now by asking him how he is. He's dying to share that story again with someone. You gave him the opportunity.
Can you believe it?
I know. Whatever, the smallest of things are exciting these days. My Instagram story today is just like pictures of the ocean from my house. I'm like, look at this amazing view I've had for the last 12 years.
We'll give it a like.
So
yeah, yeah. All of a sudden, it's like incredible. I'm like, wow.
Maybe you'd expect to see stuff like that in Melbourne, but not around here.
Yeah, yeah. I can't carry on.
So what are you up to anyway now that you're back? What's lockdown like? Paint a picture for us.
Yeah, so when I got in from Melbourne there, I think it's like over 2 weeks ago now, but obviously I had to self-quarantine for 14 days. So you land into Dublin Airport and they're just like all practice like kind of quite restricted distancing measures or whatever. But sure, by the time I got out of my own like really strict quarantine because I'd been overseas, like everybody was essentially in quarantine anyway, like everyone was then doing the same things because Leo made the announcement. And so I'm happy that everyone else had to come into quarantine with me. That was great.
That's helpful.
I haven't obviously been up to a huge amount. It was actually nice coming home and being in quarantine because I kind of got over the jet lag at a really nice like slow pace, didn't have to get back into work or anything. So yeah, I've been enjoying it, but just trying to follow all the appropriate measures and what's been asked of us.
That's
by
good.
The government and everything like that. So
we're getting some positive quarantine stories tonight. This is good. I was reading Ailish Considine's column on the RT website there earlier, and she seemed to have a bit of a nightmare trying to get back, flights cancelled, and then when she did get home, she's pretty much in the garage in the house in West Clare. And I'd say it's tough now on Ailish because she had so many decisions to make just with coming home and that. What was your trip like back?
Yeah, so Melbourne kind of took the decision out of our hands. We were, we'd gotten into the final series, as it were, but Melbourne just, they were quite ahead of everybody else in the sense of, like, we had really good measures in the club for about 4 weeks before anybody in kind of Australia really gave this any respect, if you know what I mean. So, like, the club were quite ahead of the curve and the medical staff there were really, really good. So they were really conscious of what was happening in Ireland and they were in touch with, like, the Irish consulate the whole time because they were really concerned about the prospects of us getting stuck there. So Melbourne kind of came to us and they were like, girls, we're getting you on a flight home like as soon as possible. So within 24 hours of them saying that, like, we were on a flight home. But we put up huge kind of resistance to this because we're both obviously very competitive. And we were like, no, we're not going home. We're playing the match on the weekend. But, yeah, no, like, when all the experts are kind of telling you what to do, you can't really ignore them, no matter how much of a competitive monster you are. So, but,
isn't that brilliant, though, that they took the decision out of your hands? You know what I mean? They thought about what's best for you and,
they didn't get
blindsided by the, you know, the want to win.
Yeah, no, but that's what's so special about them as a club. Like, they were in the whole process of us, like, signing and everything. Before we even went over, we just knew we were making the right decision going there. Like, they're a really, like, individual kind of orientated club in the sense that, like, the actual individual and person is more important than the sport, if that makes sense. And that would have been something that would have been really very important to myself and Sinead going over, because we're coming from somewhere in Dublin where we feel we get that as well. Like, you know, our Dublin setup, like, the manager Mick is like very player welfare orientated as well. So yeah, we're just really lucky. The club we went to were, and no doubt the rest of the clubs in the AFLW league were like really cared about their players as well, but our Melbourne were just really, really tuned in. So we were really appreciative. Well, to be honest, we weren't appreciative at the time because we didn't want to go home, but just because we, like, there was no lockdown in Australia at the time or anything, and we weren't aware of, we obviously were seeing it on the news, but it was just business as usual in Australia. Ireland were about 2 weeks ahead in terms of lockdown stuff. So we were kind of just like, oh no, we'll stay. But then within like 48 hours of us getting home, the competition had been cancelled. We got home on a flight, no problem whatsoever. And yeah, so it was just like the best thing for us. But yeah, we were obviously really grateful that, you know, they had made the decision on our behalf. And yeah, so I do think it would have been very difficult for us had we been kind of not given an ultimatum, but given the choice. I think myself and Sinead probably both would have stayed, and it might not have been the best thing for us in the end. Like, I do think some of the girls had a bit of trouble getting home, and I know now, like, there's a serious travel ban in Australia, so I would have been devastated to have been there, locked down there, instead of here, locked down in my own apartment, like, close to my family, even though I'm only talking to them from the balcony. Hi, guys. Throwing down curly whirlies.
That sounds all right.
Yeah.
Before all of this happened, what was the whole experience like for you guys over there?
Oh, yeah, it was incredible. You know, I think it's the sport over there is going from strength to strength. I think the sport's only 4 years old, so I feel as though in like 10 or 12 years you won't get a 29-year-old Irish girl being able to come over and play. Like, I think what we've seen with, say, my own sport, ladies football, in the last like decades, the professionalism and the standard in the game has gone from strength to strength because lots of girls play the whole way through. Like, actually no, every girl who plays into football, inter-head football these days, have played the whole way through, whereas in Australia there's so many cross-coders. Like, me and Sinead weren't the only cross-coders on our team. Like, there was girls coming from basketball and everything like that. So in that sense, I feel as though maybe Gaelic football might be a little bit ahead in terms of, like, just everybody who's played has played their whole life, if that makes sense. Whereas over there, there's, like, a lot of cross-coders, but I feel the competition's gone from, it's, like, making bounds much quicker than, say, ladies football would have in the past, and it's going to be an extremely, like, impressive competition in a couple of years. It is now, anyway. Like, the improvement standard year on year is incredible. But for myself and Sinead personally, I've already kind of touched on it in terms of just Melbourne being a great club. We just had an amazing experience. The girls were so patient with us, because people tell you before you go over that, like, loads of skills are really transferable, but, like, the things we do naturally are not cool.
Like, what were you doing? What were the mistakes that you made?
They're transferable, but it's a rugby ball.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. So, like, I doing things like letting the ball bounce instead of expecting it to hop back up to me. But no, I learned that quickly enough. But I would naturally play on. So I'd catch the ball where it would be in, say, a scoreable position, and you can essentially come back and have a free shot at goal, like get a free kick, like if you catch the ball. But I was just playing on, like the way I would GA, like, because obviously if you stand still when you receive the ball in the full forward line, GA, you're going to get smothered. Like, so I was just like drop stepping and just playing on, and they were like, yeah, you scored, but would you not have preferred to just kick under no pressure? But like, or sometimes, yeah, like just things like that, like we'd accidentally play on. But then in lots of ways, like 50% of the time, that was really good, because they were like, it's really unpredictable to everyone, but really unpredictable to defenders. So you're playing on and kind of creating an overlap because the defenders stopped, because all the Australians stop in that instance, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So just mistakes like that. But there were a few real things, like if the ball hits the post in AFL and comes back into the field, like it's a behind, it's not play on. So, which, and like, that's the only sport in the world I can think of. Like in rugby it's play on, in GA it's play on, soccer it's play on. I actually can't, so they'd be laughing at me and Sinead, and I'm like, no, you guys are weird, not us.
You've lost it. But I remember chatting to Cora Staunton before, and I know from Ron O'Gara, there's a way to kick the ball to receive a pass as well. You know, normally we're used to people kicking the ball up the field, whereas if you're kicking it for someone to catch it, you need to kick that end over end.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, obviously the drop punt, you're trying to get the ball to spin back towards yourself, so it's easier for the person receiving the ball to catch. Yeah, so it is. As a forward in GA, I'd be more used to like hook kicking, so like looping and kicking around my body, because obviously we play with a round ball, so kind of transitioning into squaring my hips up, and kind of the drop punt was a difficulty for me, definitely. And at the start, I was definitely kicking what they call floaters. So I'm not sure if it's the same with a rugby ball, but if you just like hoof it with no technique, the ball kind of like swivels in the air, and it's really hard for the person to like catch, and they just keep giving out to me, and I'm like, I kicked it straight at you, and then like I'd try and catch a few floaters, and I'd be like, oh yeah, I see now. But yeah, there were loads of little things like that to adapt to. But I think myself and Sinead, coming from like a field sport where we use our feet, like we're able to adapt like quite well, as we're like most of the Irish girls. I think the Irish girls over there, Cora, you know, she was the first person, I think she's made a big impact over there. Sarah Rose has 2 brilliant seasons. Ash Mack, her second season, like she was good in her first year, but she was like outstanding member of her team this second year. So I think, I know I was kind of saying there's lots to learn, but when I think back now retrospectively, I'm like, we probably are transferable to AFL. Yeah.
Do you think that it's going to improve your Gaelic football? I know you're just back, so it's hard to know yet, but just in terms of even having the few months of being a professional athlete?
Yeah, I think, I suppose, in terms of being a professional, I suppose I'm very lucky. I'm coming from a place where I would feel as though my setup in Dublin is very, very professional. But obviously, yeah, definitely, like I was working as well as training when I play with Dublin. But I'm not too sure. I think we train to the same level with Dublin. I think definitely, like, in terms of just like aerial and contesting for the ball, and maybe some of the body work in the sense of like using my body to shield the ball from the opposition and stuff like that, I definitely learnt a huge amount that I think I'll be able to bring home into our own game. But then easily, I think it might take me a while to get back into GA, because there's a lot of stoppages in AFL, and like you can't take in AFL, like you can just roll on and roll off. So when you get tired, you just like roll off. I never did it, actually, because I just never crossed my mind I would never be used to like taking myself off.
You try that with the Dubs, Niamh, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I know, imagine. I was like, Nick, I need a rest. He'd be like, yeah, you can sit there for the
permanent
rest of
one.
The
year. Yeah, you can have one for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so I actually tried to come off, and we played in Alice Springs in like central Australia. It was like 40 degrees.
Oh,
and it was
yeah.
The very end. Yeah, I was playing in midfield at the time.
Oh.
And I made like a run, space opened up, and I like made a run to support a sack, and I got a 1-2, and the girl I gave the ball back to scored a goal or whatever, which is the ideal time to take yourself off, I've been told, because you have to like reset in the centre of the pitch, like, you know, like a tip off in soccer or whatever. So I was like, I know, I'll come off here. But because it was so hot, everybody tried to come off at the same time, And because like they all sprint off so quick as if like they're in a 100-meter sprint, whereas I was just trotting off like you wouldn't gat, you know. my time is over. Like by the time I got over, they were like, McAvoy, there's no substitutions left. Like, you have to get back on. Like, and I had 40 degrees, had to turn around and jog back. I was like, never take myself off again.
Sounds like a nightmare. And just before we let you go, Niamh, just in terms of Dublin, like, do you rejoin the WhatsApp group? What happens and what do you think is going to happen this summer?
Yeah, absolutely. So as soon as I was home, like, I have a really good relationship with Mick Bowen. He's been really good to me over the last number of years. And as soon as I was home, I stayed on to him just to touch base with him, see how he is, like, see how his family are and everything. So, and I was always in touch with him while I was over there as well. So, yeah, I never left the WhatsApp group. I was still in the WhatsApp group when I was over there. I was on to Ken Robinson, our strength and conditioning guy, and he was kind of saying, you know, just take a week for your own headspace and stuff, and then here's like a program that you can get back into in your own time or whatever. And then I'm back into it in the sense of I'm joining, linking in with the team for any of the Zoom calls they're having. So we are kind of touching base once a week as a team, just to kind of, because none of us will be used to, you know, yourself, like, we're all team sports, we wouldn't be used to like training as individuals, so that can be quite hard. But yeah, no, back in the mix, and great to, even though it was over a video conference, it was great to see all the girls, and can't wait to touch base with them all again soon. I don't know what the summer has in store for us, but I hope it will be a championship competition. I don't really know the ins and outs of how things are played out. So,
Niamh, we all do. We absolutely all do. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. An incredible time in Melbourne, and we wish you all the best with the Dubs when you get back out there.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me. Game On 2FM.